If you spend any time on the internet, and especially perhaps on Facebook, you may have noticed the increasing popularity of a kind of personality test or game that you can play. There are all kinds of them. They go by names like this: which Downton Abbey character are you? Or which Star Wars character are you? Or, you already know, I think. You're Carson, the butler. Okay. He's taken the test. If you haven't seen these tests, what they consist of is a battery of questions, and you click on the test, you answer all the questions, and then it calculates your score, and it tells you who you are most like. Now, I tend not to take those tests. I'm afraid I might become the scheming Thomas, the footman who's always up to no good on Downton Abbey. You may not either. You may have never seen them. But I am not immune to trying out various inventories to learn more about who I am and why I act the way I do. And over the years, I've participated in more respectable versions, you might say, of these tests. I've taken the Myers-Briggs inventory more than once. And if you have, maybe you can compare your four letters at coffee hour with someone else. I've tried to figure out what number I am on the Enneagram. And in any number of continuing education workshops, I have placed my name somewhere on a grid, picked some metaphor or some illustration that best describes me. You may have done that in your professional life as well. Well, we all know that no four letters on a Myers-Briggs inventory will describe everything there is about any one of us. But I have had some of those aha moments when I have seen the result of a test like that and said, of course, this is why I love to work on Project A and always want to ignore Problem B. Or this is why that parish member and I are always disagreeing at a vestry meeting, because we see the world in different ways and we come about solving problems in different ways. Helpful in self-understanding? Yes. Do they disclose all that there is to know? No. Well, it's with that caveat in mind that I want to suggest that our gospel lesson this morning presents us with what might be considered one part of a personality test that we would call, what kind of disciple are you? Or perhaps, how do you best hear the call of God in your life? One of the great challenges of meeting Jesus in the Gospels is that we have four Gospel writers, and each tells the story of Jesus in a different way. For some persons, this is a challenge, particularly when those accounts seem to contradict each other. How can we trust these stories if they seem to be portraying the events that happened in Jesus' life in very different ways? Well, early on, the community that formed itself around Jesus was determined to tell the full story and finally decided that it could only be told by including all four of these Gospels in what we come to know as the Bible. So each story, each with its own accents, was regarded as essential to presenting the breadth and depth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So let's take John's gospel this morning and then compare it with the other gospel writers and how they portray the call of the first disciples. Two persons are with John the Baptist. They are disciples of John when John points to Jesus and says, "Look, here is the Lamb of God." The two are intrigued, and they begin to simply follow Jesus as he passes by. They just start walking behind him. Jesus notices this and strikes up a conversation with them. "What are you looking for?" he asks. "Rabbi," they say, "where are you staying?" And Jesus said to them, "Come and see." How does the call to discipleship begin? With a conversation, with a sense of interest, a question posed by those who will follow. And in response to that question, "Where are you staying?" a somewhat enigmatic answer, come and see. Come and see. If these three words are a gateway to discipleship, then they suggest that there is an open and creative space into which one can enter when one decides to follow Jesus Christ. Come and see. Come and explore. Come and discover. Come see what God will do in your life as you engage on this pilgrimage path. Are you unsure of whom this Jesus is who has caught your eye or maybe a part of your heart? Come and see. Are you struggling to reconcile the reality of your own life or the circumstances of the world with the promises of a Messiah who will release all of the captives and heal the sick and give sight to the blind? Then come and see. Something intrigues us, someone intrigues us. We begin to follow, we strike up a conversation, we decide to take at least the next step to go to see where this stranger is staying and what he is all about. What kind of disciple are you? Perhaps you are one for whom those three words create curiosity or even excitement, maybe some eagerness, maybe even delight. One for whom the Christian life might best be described as a continual process of discovery being drawn deeper and deeper into a life with God. But remember, this personality test has more than one question. Three other Gospels also tell us the story of the call of the first disciples. Matthew and Mark tell it almost exactly the same way. Mark says that it is Jesus who sees these two, or two disciples, two different ones. It's he who approaches them as they are on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, tending to their nets. He sees them casting their nets into the sea, and he says to them simply this, "Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." And then there is that line illustrating a model of discipleship that is at once remarkable and intimidating. Immediately, they left their nets and followed him. No conversation here. No questions about where Jesus is staying or where he is going or what it will mean to follow him. No invitation to come and see, rather more a summons. Follow me. Now, I am painting with a broad brush here, but it is a different gateway into a life with Christ. It's about radical obedience and understanding that first and foremost, the responsibility of discipleship is to follow. Will there be questions? Yes. Will there be doubt? Perhaps. But the story suggests that when we hear Christ call, we can give up everything to follow him. It's a narrow way, perhaps best exemplified by nuns and monks who give up everything to walk the way of the cross with Christ. Perhaps you are one of the disciples from Mark's gospel, for whom that narrow way, that sense of a summons, is not threatening, but rather compelling. It's another way to enter into discipleship. I always thought Luke's story was just about the same as Matthew and Mark's, but then I looked at it this week, and he even has one more distinctive way for discipleship to occur. As Luke tells it, Jesus approaches these persons, but it's clear he may already have established some kind of relationship with them. And he gets into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon Peter, and asks Simon Peter to get out a little bit away from the shore. And once they get out there, Jesus teaches the crowds from that distance. But then Jesus turns to Peter and invites him to let down his nets for a catch. In a spot where Peter has just spent the night fishing, catching nothing. Peter says, "I've done that, there are no fish," but he does as Jesus asks, and suddenly he brings up the nets teeming with fish, and he is in awe. And all he can say is this: "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful person." But Jesus said, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people." And when they had brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed him. "Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch." There, too, is a call to discipleship, just as compelling as the other two, an invitation to experience the abundant grace of God in one's life. Even if that miracle of grace results in leaving one's life, one's vocation that one has known, for another. So, we may respond to God's invitational call with curiosity, eager to explore the questions of faith when we hear these words, "Come and see." We may respond to God's compelling call with radical obedience, willing to see where it is that we will be led when we hear, "Follow me." And we may respond to the grace-filled call of God with humility or a sense of inadequacy even, thinking we must turn away when we hear the words that turn us back toward Christ: "Do not be afraid." Like any test, this particular inventory cannot describe any one of us fully. And if truth is told, while one call may resonate with us more than another, the call is always new in our lives. And who knows, at different times in our lives, we may be responding quite differently or hearing the voice of God quite differently. Even if you see yourself more as one type than another, the full life of discipleship will engage us day after day with a renewed call. We see that in the life and witness of one of the Christian martyrs of our own time, Martin Luther King. Here was someone who heard the compelling summons to follow Christ, whatever the cost, whatever the sacrifice. But here was also someone who, convinced that the way of Christ was the way of nonviolent love, continually responded to that call and, in effect, said to us continually, come and see what the reality of God's kingdom looks like when one offers oneself unconditionally and nonviolently in a loving way. And here was someone who was beset by his own doubts and exhaustion in that struggle at times, and yet who spoke movingly time and again of the wellsprings of God's grace that enabled him to put his nets out into the deep and to not be afraid. I began by suggesting that these various stories give us a chance to describe ourselves, but ultimately they are not stories about us, about our particular personalities, but rather about God and of the myriad ways in which God enters into human existence to call us, to woo us, to love us. How does God reach us through Jesus Christ to call us to the fullness of life? God reaches each of us in the language, the story, the pattern of call to which we can respond most fully. We need all the stories. For some of us will respond most eagerly to that gracious invitation, "Come and see." Some will respond most willingly and ably to the two words that evoke surrender and release, "Follow me." And some, when the step forward in faith seems frightening, will respond most fully through a sheer experience of grace. What kind of disciple are you? My hope is that whichever kind you are one who will continually be open to hearing that call, renewed again and again, sometimes comforting, sometimes challenging, but always one that is adventurous, compelling, and gracious. For God is faithful. faithful to us. And it is by God that we are called to come and see, to follow, and to experience the grace that is our life together in Jesus Christ. Amen.